Hi, this is Seth Kahn, author of FreelanceFortune.com, the website that provides independent consultants with the tools they need to succeed in the marketplace. I am pleased to present this interview with Alan Weiss. I first met Alan in 2002 when I hired him to be my mentor, 9 months before leaving my day job at the World Bank. Since that time, I have come to realize over and over again what an excellent choice I made. Alan is an exceptional man and a rare gift to entrepreneurs around the globe. He has produced an impressive collection of intellectual property and workshops, known for their practical impact, improving the lives of his readers and those who are lucky enough to work with him face to face. His prolific publishing includes over 500 articles and 32 books, including his bestseller, Million Dollar Consulting. All of these are available through his website, summitconsulting.com. Having spent many hours with him, I can tell you that Alan has an uncommonly generous heart. He has unmatched insight as a mentor and knows how to push a person to achieve the best, most direct path to extraordinary results. Alan gives a stunning and noteworthy amount to those who work with him. This interview focuses on his mentor program, which has been a singular vehicle for leveraging his expertise, extending his reach to a myriad of people worldwide. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I have. As always, there are real treasures to be found in Alan's words.
The mentor program came out of the fact that after Million Dollar Consulting was published in 92, all kinds of people were calling me for advice, and it never dawned on me not to give it. And 4 years later, that had grown to such a state that I was spending more time giving free advice than I was spending time earning money. And so that's when I decided to charge for the mentor program.
And how long did it take you to build a viable community, both in terms of having a critical mass, people helping each other out, as well as in terms of the business revenue you were getting?
Well, you know, sometimes it's good to walk in the dark because you don't realize that there are scorpions and snakes around. And if you have no idea, you feel a lot safer. So I had no idea about building community, and I had no idea about critical mass. As a matter of fact, when I first began the mentor program, I recall I got one person right away, a second, a third, a fourth. And my wife, who was a little bit skeptical that anyone would ever pay to be mentored, had to agree that it seemed to be working. And I had, 12 people. And I actually kept their names on a piece of paper, their names and phone numbers, which I miniaturized on my copier. I had one of these reducing and enlarging copiers at the time. And I would carry it in my Filofax with me so that when I was on a trip, if they called me, I could call them back. And, you know, then it got to be 18 names, and then a couple of people went on hold, and then some people, left after 6 months. And I said, well, this is no way to run a railroad. You know, this train's off the tracks. And so, but that's how it started, with that handful of people. And then every year it just grew and grew like crazy.
Was there a point when you realized this was, like, a really big deal?
Yeah. The point was when I started to realize that the community was sufficient so that I could start from square 1412 and not square one. So in other words, people in the community knew all they had to know about me. And they started selling to each other. They started convincing each other they should go to different workshops, engage in some of my other experiences. They tell other people to join. And when I introduced something, it was introducing it into a very, very receptive audience. Just before I got on the phone with you, I have a message here from an artist. I'm looking to do a cartoon about the dogs. It's one of the new things that I've planned in this constant reinvention I talk about, and I have committed to do it in 2010, and so I need an artist because I can't draw. And he said to me at one point, I like the idea of Buddy and Koufax, he said, in the whole business. And he said, if you need help with punchlines or anything, I can give you help. And I said, look, I just want you to draw. I said to him, virtually everyone who will be seeing these cartoons, these comics with the dogs, knows the dogs. They have seen them in my videos. They've read about them in my books. They've heard about them in my audio. They've seen them in multimedia and heard about them in multimedia. And so I don't have to introduce them to anybody. And Koufax and Buddy get email. And some people, as you know, Seth, think Buddy is actually on Alan's forums. and he gets mail. So I won't.
I've seen him. He is on Alan's forums.
And so there's an analogy from just 30 minutes ago wherein you have a community when you can skip all the preliminaries, and you can skip the secondary stuff and even the tertiary stuff. And so if you think of the accelerant curve I talk about, actually I've been thinking that the accelerant curve is inadequate in what I'm going to be presenting in the near future. And I've just, by the way, signed a contract with C-Pines for the next Venture Summit. What I'm going to be talking about is how that slides to the right, just like, you know, nothing static. It's a motion picture. And consequently, when community grows, people begin to drop in on the right. They don't have to go down the accelerant curve. Mm. And it's a very different, interesting dynamic. So I'm playing with that concept right now.
About how long do you think it took you to get to that point?
Well, I started the mentor program in 96 because my first Ferrari was in 1995, and I decided to charge the lease amount. And so that's why I know when it was. I would think that 2 years, outside it was 2 years.
Hmm.
And that's with doing nothing. I mean, don't forget, like I said, I'm walking in a dark room, and I don't know what's in there. And so I'm bold enough to walk through the room, and I'm confident if I get knocked on the head, I can get up again. But that's with really no strong stimulation from me. My wife said to me this morning, I was pursuing somebody who had committed to something, and my wife said, God, you're assertive. She said, you're really aggressive about this. I said, well, you know, this is about, you know, really creating business. That's what I do. But then I wasn't that aggressive about this, and I still don't sell the program, but I didn't really realize what I had. And then sort of my eyes opened. I am not always good at promoting something new, but I am very, very good at recognizing something that's working.
Mm.
And when I recognized that was working, you know, when the aha happened, just like with the Million Dollar Consulting College, I just said, okay, damn the torpedoes, you know, full throttle, here we go.
Mm. And give me an idea of where the numbers are now, just approximately. How many folks have been through the program?
There have been slightly more than 1,000 participations, and that includes people who sign up for a second and third time. The record right now is 14 or 15. He just sends me a check at the beginning of the year and says, this is for the whole next year. That's global. It's from, I don't know, last time I counted it was 15 countries.
Hmm.
And the conservative estimate, 4 years ago, a couple of mentorees, three or four of them got together, and they made an estimate on an annualized basis of how much I had improved the revenue of people in the program. And after they came up with the number, or as they were doing it, I said, I cut it in half. I don't want to see anything. I want to see 50% of what you come up with before I'll even talk about it. And the number at 50% was $600 million that I've improved revenues for people, these 1,000 participations. Or at that time, you know, somewhat less than that. And then someone pointed out the other day, I forget who this was, it might have been Suzanne Bates, but somebody pointed out to me just a couple of weeks ago that if you extrapolated that to the benefit to the clients of all these people, in other words, what have all these people done for their clients, the number was into the billions.
Hmm.
And so that's pretty interesting, from starting with 12 people whose names I was carrying around in my wallet.
That's phenomenal. That's really incredible. What have been some of the really dramatic successes on your end? Can you tell us a story or two about something that's happened as a result of your mentoring someone that's really phenomenal?
Yes, but I can't mention names, obviously, and I need to just make sure I hide this sufficiently. I'm going to use an amalgam here, Seth, because I want to make very sure I observe confidentiality. But I have worked with people who were charging, at the time, a minuscule amount compared to what they were worth. And, of course, their value was going to build as they went on. And these people who are such eager learners and such ready adapters changed their entire outlook, and their entire philosophies. It starts between your ears and went from, you know, $100,000 to $800,000. Well, went from $600,000 to $2 million. I mean, one of the great, one of the proudest points of the program for me is I can work with people at all levels, whether they're just entering or they're veteran. Now, I mean, let me name somebody I can talk about because it's professional, it's business, and so forth, and that's Guido Kell in Germany. People told me for years that value-based pricing would never work in a German business culture. Just couldn't be done. And I've been told that repeatedly. And then Guido comes along one happy day and says, I really like this stuff. I'm going to give it a try. And less than 2 years later, if I'm not mistaken, but certainly 2 years later, he had transformed his entire business, which is a multi-million euro business, into value-based fees. And so these processes are immutable. They are cross-cultural. And when you get somebody like Ito and you watch him do that, it's just staggeringly impressive. So I've also seen people who were really about to throw their lives away. They were throwing their lives away on bad advice and bad support systems and bad approaches and bad self-images and yada, yada, yada. And I've helped them to realize nothing more than the very simple fact of their own talent and that their own talent is worth a great deal and they need to express it better. The interesting part is, you know, picking up a phone and talking to somebody in Beijing who is going into a meeting in 10 minutes or calling somebody back from the Queen Mary who is astounded that I'm in the middle of the Atlantic and they've got an important proposal and they need two pieces of information on. I just talked to a fellow this morning from the U.K. Who said, he's got the biggest piece of business he ever landed, which I helped him to land a few months ago. And now he's going into a second phase, but there are some hiccups, as there always are. And he's smart enough to say, you know, preemptively, these are the three issues I have. What do you think we should do about it? The reason I'm laughing is, you can always edit this out if you like, but on Friday, I'm very efficient, and I'm trying to make my calls from my car and so forth, so I'm going to a doctor's appointment. And I see his call from the U.K., and I realize, you know, I have to dial 27 numbers, and I've only got about 8 minutes before my appointment, so I'm going to call him when I come out. So I come out of the lot, and it's now about, 3:30 or, no, I can maybe 2:30, but, you know, it's 6 hours earlier than the U.K. And I start the engine of my car in the lot, and I have Bluetooth. I dial his number, and he picks up, and he says, geez, I'm surprised to hear from you. I said, well, I wanted to get back to you. I'm sorry I couldn't be earlier. And he said, great. He says, I've got this issue. I said, go ahead. And he spoke for about 30 seconds, Seth. And then there was silence. And first I thought he was just getting his thoughts together. And then I thought that maybe the connection went dead. And then after about 45 seconds, I said his name. And he said, you know, Alan, I'm sorry. He said, but when you called me, I had just sat down to dinner and I've had a bit of wine and I've lost my entire train of thought. And I said, listen, I'm sitting in a $250,000 car, which gets 10 miles to the gallon, with the motor running, calling you transatlantic. When do you think your thoughts will be together? And, I mean, those are lines. Stuff like that happens to me 3 or 4 times a week, and it really makes things worthwhile.
Wow. What about some of your most gratifying moments? When you're running a program like this, when you're talking to hundreds of people a year, what for you is most gratifying?
Well, I mean, there are two times when I break down. I mean, and I can't, despite everything I try, I can't stop it. One is when I induct people, you know, like yourself, into the Hall of Fame. I came up with the Hall of Fame idea a few years ago. I guess we're in our seventh or year or so. And I'm a big believer that you recognize people, that this is not an egalitarian world, and that people whose talents stand out should be recognized. I mean, I've received accolades myself, and so I thought the Hall of Fame would be a good idea. And the first time I did it in public was at the Million Dollar Consulting grad school I was running in Naples, and to my surprise, I just started to break down because there were 4 or 5 of the people were in that room. And every time I've done it, I have trouble getting through it. The other time is at the last morning at the Million Dollar Consulting College, which, as you know, people have to get up and report on what they're going to do from there and what their experience was like. And at the very first one, the very first consulting college, a really excellent and very tough woman stood up and just completely broke down. And I was floored. And it's happened quite a few times, and people have comforted each other. But after 4.5 days, it's such a powerful, emotional, emotive kind of experience that it's very moving. And so, you know, the creating the mentor program and doing things like the Million Dollar Consulting College are two of the proudest things I've done. I still get calls from people who went through 6 to 7, you know, 6 figures to 7, who are still with their original accountability partners. They're still meeting. People who have been through Shameless Promotion, the first group through Shameless Promotion, still calls each other once a month. And I think coincidentally, they're all going to be in London next week when I do the Mentor Mastery Training. And we're spending an extra day on a follow-up to Shameless Promotion. So when I see that kind of longevity and that kind of commitment and that kind of really transcendental experience that people have, it's extraordinarily rewarding, and it's above and beyond anything I expected to encounter in that dark room.
Hmm. You have really transformed lives on a large scale. One of the things that you're known for is your responsive style. You know, cut the story, get to the point, taking calls.
Is there a question here?
How and when did you develop that?
Well, I'm basically lazy and selfish. I mean, that's probably going to be my legacy. But I don't like to work very hard. I work very intensely for short periods. I mean, more intensely than any other five people during a full day. But other than that, I don't like to work very hard. And the other thing is, I really believe in what Bill Ahnken was talking about 30, 40 years ago, which is you don't allow someone to leave a monkey on your desk. And so I'm very selfish in my time. I can always make another buck. I can't make another minute. And I'm quick, you know. I mean, I'm not the dumbest bear who's ever going to emerge from the woods. I'm really quick. So please, talk to me at my speed, not your speed. And what happens, Seth, is that so many people articulate their cognitive process. This happens in business all the time. They articulate their cognitive process to help them along, but it's not helping anything else. And so the only way to break them of the habit is to stop them. Otherwise, you empower that, or you enable it. So that's why I began doing it a long, long time ago. I was convinced. I mean, once I stopped managing national and international sales forces, and I almost went to jail for killing several people, I realized I had to be a solo practitioner. I had to be independent. And if I was going to be independent and I didn't really want any kind of staff at all, then I needed to make the best use of my time. And the only way to make the best use of your time is to prevent other people from using it. And that's what I do.
Hmm. How'd you come to the decision to invite other people to mentor underneath you?
A couple of ways. I literally sat up on the Cape May beach on the Jersey Shore in July of last year, 2009, and I said, my God, I've got it. And it just came to me. I've always wanted to maintain the original price of the mentor program at $3,500, which I've scrupulously done for 14 years, for goodness sakes. But I'm also realizing that I need to expand the mentor program to have a greater reach, even though the last year I brought on about 135 people. I can't bring on 500 people. Even I know that. I mean, at first I thought I could do 12. Well, I was wrong by a factor of, 12. But the fact is I can't bring on 500. So how do I really expand this the way it should be expanded? Thirdly, a lot of people are more effective than I am at basic questions because they were closer to it. In other words, if you're talking to somebody who is where you were 3 years ago, it's probably a little bit easier to give them pragmatic advice than it is for me at this point. And then finally, there's a limit to how often I can whack the mole here. There's a limit to how often I can answer a question like, how do you know who the buyer is? So this solved all of those problems, every single one of them. I could raise my rates. I didn't have to deal with the fundamentals. I could have a cadre of great people. And I could also reward people because, in about 5 years, I am going to have a radical transformation, reinvention that I'm already thinking about. And at that point, the mentor program, probably my involvement will stop, but I fully, fully expect the mentor program to go on. And there'll be an inner circle of people who have the option, if they're interested, to carry it on. I'd like to see it as a legacy. My son and daughter aren't going to run it. My son and daughter will probably get my book rights if they treat me well for the next 20 years. But somebody's going to have to run the mentor program. And that entire community, which I hope will become much more self-perpetuating. So for all of those great reasons, that's why I did it, and I had hoped to get 100 people by 2015, and I've got, I think, 22 or 23 people right now, so I'm ahead of my own game plan, and I'll probably get conservatively, another 6 or 8 people this year, so that's wonderful.
How do you choose those people?
Well, I let them choose themselves. I put it out there, and I let them self-select. Now, I veto people who I don't think are appropriate, and, I've asked some people to come back to me in another year or to wait or to do something. My basic criteria, which you can find on the website, are that you have to be through the mentor program once, obviously, so you've been through the system, but preferably twice, or if not twice, you've been to the Million Dollar Consulting College, or you've gone to my workshops, or you go to the mentor summits, or you're active on Alan's forums. I mean, the community has a lot of variations, and so it depends where you want it to be involved. It also, I'll let you skip some of that stuff if you're already a coach who has a very successful coaching track record. because a lot of that is transferable, although coaches have to understand there's a difference between coaching and mentoring. So I've let people self-select. I've told them whether, you know, I think they're appropriate or not. I've probably turned down, you know, six or eight people, at least half of which I know will come back. And that's how we're going to go forward. So I'm looking, these people have to come from the community. The community enlarges every year. I think the Master Mentors will enlarge every year.
You just mentioned a minute ago about this, you'd like to see this be a self-perpetuating community. What's your vision for your community of mentees?
Well, if you think about it, what I've done is I've peppered the landscape with intellectual property. I mean, you know, value-based fees and finding the buyer and looking at the input versus output. And, I mean, you could look at all these Allenisms and everything they've got up. But, you know, I've just sprayed the place with intellectual property. And so consequently, you know, that can be improved upon and evolved and recombined. Hell, I'm doing it myself all the time. But I think that there'll be forces within the community, personalities and people and so forth, who will continue to lead Allen's forums, who will lead, perhaps start new workshops. I want to eventually license, even in the United States, the ability to run million-dollar consulting colleges and these, you know, I've done at least 25 other kinds of workshops to do all that stuff. My own feeling is I'll continue to write. I'll continue to speak on occasion. I'm going to continue to be active, but just in a different way. And I see, frankly, Allen and the gang, which Chad and I have been working on for over a year and which we think will be up probably in the next month or so, I guess. I see Allen and the gang as the future of just-in-time learning. And I want to be very, very involved with that, and I want to enlarge the gang. And so there's a lot of interesting things coming down the pike. So by no means am I going away, but I think all of us have to evolve and reinvent ourselves, and that's what keeps me interested, frankly.
Hmm. So I have one last question, and this is for the people who are listening to this who are not yet in the program but will be shortly. Is there a set of behaviors or an attitude that you have found is particularly effective at accelerating results once you come into the program?
Are you talking about the mentor program or the...
I'm talking about people coming at the bottom. Anyone who signs up for their first time as a mentee.
Oh, well, yeah. The behaviors that will stand you in the best stead in no particular order are as follows. You have to be non-defensive. You have to be sort of an open book, willing to learn, blank pages, willing to have written on, you know, that kind of a thing. But you can't be a protective or defensive about what you've done in the past. So you have to be willing to learn. I mean, I still remember one guy who called me on the phone and it was to check out the mentor program, and he mentioned something he was doing, and I said to him, well, you know, that's an example of something that won't work. And he said to me, wait a minute, is this the way the program works? You tell me I'm wrong because you think you're smarter than I am? And I said, no, it doesn't, because we're not working together, and I hung up. So you can't be defensive or protective. Secondly, you have to have a healthy self-esteem or be willing to have it built. You might come into the program with some low self-esteem. It sort of comes with the turf sometimes, but you have to be open to having it built. So that, because if you have high self-esteem, you have the freedom to fail. That is, you don't beat yourself up. And so this profession is about rejection. It's about failure. It's about learning from that and moving ahead. So you can't be bruised easily. You have to have resilience. There's another way to look at that. You have to be fairly assertive. Mentoring is reactive, and so you have to be willing to come to the mentor. And you have to be assertive to do that. I love people who say, you know, am I bothering you? Are you bothering me? I'm here for you. Or some people will send me an email asking if it's all right to call later. You know, pick up the phone and call, for goodness sakes. So, excuse me. So you need to be highly assertive. And the final thing I would say is you have to be disciplined. You really have to be disciplined to do what you say you will do. You know, the stereotypical example here is when I tell people, you know, you should be writing an article in 2 hours, not 2 weeks. And they argue and moan and whine and everything else, and they finally get it down, you know, to 2 days or whatever. And I say, that's still a lot better than 2 weeks, isn't it? And it's a matter, really, of disciplining yourself to follow through. I have tremendous discipline. I can get, you know, as much done in a day as I choose to get done. And discipline is helpful whenever you're trying to learn something. This discipline is as important as talent.
Hmm. This has been great, Allen. Thank you for your time very much. I really appreciate it.
Is that it?
That's it.
God, that wasn't painful at all, Seth. Did you give more time to the other people?
No, huh? Less time.
That would make me upset.
No, you got the most time.
Okay, that's good.
All right, talk to you soon.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.